I'm thankful for everyone who has participated in the service so far today. Near the Cross, by the way, is one of my absolute favorite songs, and so, or Jesus Keep Me Near the Cross, and I love that we sang that one, and I'll be singing that in my head for the rest of the day. So thank you very much for that also. The passage that was just read says, "But as for me, I will wait upon the Lord," or "I will watch expectantly for the Lord. I will wait for the God of my salvation. My God will hear me." That's a beautiful expression of trust in God and of devotion towards God and of hope in God. But one of the things that's interesting about it is it does begin, this is Micah 7:7, with the word, "But as for me, I will watch." Almost as if there's a contrast taking place, and guess what? There is a contrast taking place. If you read the earlier part of Micah chapter 7, it's not good. It is basically saying, even if everything bad happens in this world, even if an enemy comes in and overtakes, even if the worst things you could imagine possibly happen, I will still put my hope and my trust in God. The verses right before it, describing some of the worst things you could imagine, says this: "Do not put trust in a neighbor. Do not have confidence in a friend from her who lies in your bosom. Guard your lips, for son treats father contemptuously. Daughter rises up against her mother. Daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies are the men of his own household." So what he's describing here, when describing like the worst things that could happen, are what about when you have no one near you that you can trust? You can't trust your neighbor. You can't talk to a friend. You can't even speak to the woman you love who lies in your arms. Your children treat you contemptuously. Like, when there's no trust in the household, you can still put your trust in God. And he calls them to put their trust in God. But one of the reasons that that is described that way, as no trust in the household, is because that is obviously something that none of us want. None of us would hope that, "Oh, I hope I can't trust my neighbor, my friends, my wife, or my kids, and I hope none of them can trust me." The goal of human flourishing is that in the household, you would be able to trust your wife and your kids, and they would be able to trust you. I know for myself, speaking as a husband and a father, I so badly want my wife and my kids to trust me. And I want them to trust me enough to come and talk to me, to talk to me about difficulties going on in their life, to talk to me about things that they're afraid of. I want my kids to be able to talk to me about things that they did that they're ashamed of. Like, I don't want to be a source that they're so afraid of that if they do something wrong, they want nothing to do with me. I want to be like a safety net where even if they've done something wrong, they know this is a person who will still love me and care for me and help me. Like, I want to foster that kind of relationship. In the lesson this morning, we're going to be talking about how it is that we, as people within a family, can foster that type of relationship. Now, I will probably be speaking mostly with respect to parents living in such a way that their children will trust them and be able to go to them as a resource and be able to go to them even in difficult times, and how it is that you, as a parent, can kind of foster that relationship. But I've also tried to do this in such a way where, kids, if you want your parents to trust you, which I think everyone does, I think it's pretty universal, people want to be trusted. Life is easier and better and more pleasant when you are trusted. People will allow you to do more. People might give you more responsibilities, which can be good or bad. But generally, people want to be trusted. Relationships are better when you're trusted. So kids, if you want your parents to trust you, pretty much everything I'm going to say will apply to you also. Grandparents, if you want to be a source of positive influence in the life of your children and grandchildren, if you want them to trust you, then I think a lot of the things that we're going to say right here are going to be applicable for you as well. If you are a husband and a wife and you want your spouse to trust you, a lot of the things that we're going to be are going to be applicable for that as well. Basically, if you want to be able to have any sort of positive influence on another person, absolutely key and foundational to influence is trust. If people don't trust you, they're not going to go to you as a source of help and strength and influence. And so if you want to influence people possibly, you have to do the long, hard, steady, difficult work of becoming a person worthy of trust. of becoming a trustworthy person. And that long, difficult road is what we're going to be talking about. What are some of the things that you can do and that I can do to help foster an attitude where we can be trusted and a way of life where people would trust us? Several years ago, I'm old now, so sometimes I say several years ago and I mean like 20 years ago, but this is probably about 18 years ago or so. I was on my chair in my house one evening, and it was about 11:30 p.m. And by the way, I'm going to make myself sound bad in the story, so please trust that I've matured some since this time. I don't know that I have, but trust that I have. No, that's not a good way to develop trust, by the way. Just telling people to do it, but. I called a friend of mine, 11:30 p.m., and I was a younger man, and he did answer the phone. I wasn't sure that he would or not, and he was in bed. He was about to go to sleep, and he saw my phone call, and he loved me enough to answer that phone call. And I called him, and I said, hey, Jared, that was his name, and he said, yeah, what's up? And I said, I am so sorry to do this. I was driving through Durant, which is the city that he lived in, that was in Oklahoma, and I said, and my truck broke down, and I'm on the side of the road, and I need some help. And he said, are you serious? And I said, yes. And we started talking. He asked me where I was, and I told him the gas station that I was right by, and that I was on the side of the road, and that I was just needing... Anyway, this guy is so sweet. He got out of bed and started getting dressed to go to his truck and to come. But I should tell you, it was April 1st when I was calling him. And and at one point, he even recognized that and said, it's April Fool's Day. Are you being serious? And I said, yes. Anyway, so once he got to his truck, I called him back, and I said, hey, good news, you can go back to bed. It's April 1st. I was just joking with you. He is a nice guy, and I used it against him. We're still friends, by the way, but I'll say this. I have developed a habit since that time. Every single April 1st, I will call him. And I will try in some way to fool him with something. And you know what's really, really, really hard to do? To fool someone on the same date for the 18th time in a row when they know you're going to try to fool them. You have to like you have to get creative with it. And sometimes you have to take way like worse payoffs, like, you know, get them to believe something that doesn't matter at all. But anyway, all of that is a way to say, if I ever actually am stranded on the side of the road at 11:30 p.m. on April 1st, I know who not to call. I have burned that bridge, and he will never come and help me. And probably any other day of the year also. But all of that is a way of saying that there are things you can do that will destroy trust in a relationship. And we will have an entire lesson in a couple of weeks on things that are trust destroyers, things that can really harm it. But it is also virtually everything I'm going to say here, the reverse of it is also true in that if you do these things consistently, I think they will help in building trust. But also the opposite of them is if you don't do these things, or if you practice dishonesty and things like that, you will end up destroying trust in a relationship, and it's really, really difficult to repair that. As I said, we'll have a different lesson that focuses more on that topic. But what I wanted us to do today is discuss how it is that we can build trust in our houses and in our homes so that we have an environment where people do trust each other, where people rely on each other, where people can talk to one another, even about dangerous or difficult or embarrassing things. We can talk about our failures. How do we do that? Well, speaking as parents, how do you get your kids to trust you? One thing I would say, just kind of foundational at the outset, is I do think when it comes to parents wanting their children to trust them, I do think that's pretty much universal. Everyone wants that. But we need to have reasonable expectations of trust. Sometimes we can think, look, I'm the parent, so they should trust me absolutely in everything. And what's difficult is the whole story, the whole trajectory of being a parent is basically you have this newborn child that every single thing they need in life, survival itself, it depends upon you being there and being the ultimate source of protection and provision and helping them every step of the way. But you're doing that full well knowing that as they grow, they will need you less and less and less. They will grow more capable. They will learn how to do some things themselves. And all of a sudden, what you're doing is you're kind of like working yourself out of those responsibilities so that they can handle life on their own. And part of what that means with respect to trust is your children are kind of by design from the very beginning, you are the sole source of information, basically. You are like the sole source, like you provide everything. They trust you with their entire lives every second of the day. But again, as they grow, you are going to recognize that they will start trusting other things also. There will be competition for trust. They will ultimately, as they grow and become adults, you want to, hopefully, prayerfully, still be a positive resource in their life, but they're going to trust a lot of other things also. And your influence is going to wane and is going to not be what it once was. And sometimes that's very difficult on the parent, who thinks like, no, I do know best, trust me. It's like, I'm the one who you should be listening to above everything else. Because we also recognize that some of those areas of competition for trust, some of them are wonderful. It's like, I hope my children develop good relationships with people at this church who are trusting, who are people who you're able to trust, who can have a positive influence. I think there's a lot of wonderful sources of trust in this world, but we also know there are some really wretched sources of trust in this world. A lot of times your kids' peers are not going to be great sources for them to trust, but they'll start trusting them. And you want to not lose this child because they started putting their trust in the wrong thing. And so it's something that can cause a lot of anxiety. I want them to still trust me. I think we have to go into this with the mindset that we are basically, as a parent, you are like the sole source of trust in their life. But as they grow, you want to have a peaceful transition of power where they go from trusting you to ultimately trusting the God that they have heard you speak of so much in their lives. The passage that we just read to start off this lesson talks about, even if you can't trust family, I'll put my trust in you, Lord. And we've talked about throughout this sermon series, the only source where you are called to put absolute, unquestioned, and unfailing trust in is God. It's not your parents even. It is God is the only one who is the absolute source that you can always trust. And so as parents, we want to be a source of trust. We will be a source of trust, but that is something that is going to be filtered out a little bit over time, and that's a difficult process. I think as we approach that process, we need to recognize, look, when I'm dealing with a 2-year-old, it's different than when I'm dealing with a 12-year-old, which is different than when I'm dealing with a 22-year-old. And I can't be the absolute source of trust all the way through. They are going to have other resources. They are going to have other voices they listen to. And the reality is, I'm not an expert on everything. My children shouldn't trust me when it comes to marine biology, you know? They should probably trust the Wildcrats when it comes to learning some of those things rather than just trusting me. Like, there are other sources that are better than me on some of those things. I do think it's helpful for parents to have the humility to recognize what areas I am a trustworthy resource in, what areas maybe we can work together to find some trustworthy resources. And ultimately, the goal is that they will not trust you the most forever. They will trust God the most forever, and that you will have built a foundation of trust that you can have a peaceful and positive influence the rest of their lives, but at the same time recognizing there are going to be many other influences on them. You can't hold that forever. And so humility and honesty and the transfer from trust in you to trust in God is a really important part of this whole thing. And so as we talk about parents being a source of trust for their children and being someone your children can trust, that's a powerful responsibility. It gives you a lot of power, but it also is something that needs to be done with humility. It's something that needs to be done absolutely with love and with a desire for your child to grow in faithfulness and in flourishing rather than just to make sure you're always the sole source of authority and control. You won't be. You can't be. And so make sure you're trying to be trustworthy for the right reasons rather than holding on to that and fighting against reality and fighting against what is inevitable. You can end up straining the relationship that way. And I'll also say you kind of have to choose what matters most for you to be trustworthy in. What I mean by that is I recognize right now, I already said it, I'm not going to be the source of trust in marine biology. There's probably a lot of fields of knowledge and a lot of even areas of life where they can find other resources, especially as they grow and get older, that are going to help them perhaps even more than I can. But I hope that they always see me as a positive influence and as someone they can trust when it comes to their walk with God. I want that to always be the foundation of our relationship. I want them to always trust that even if I don't have all the answers, I love them and I'm a safe place to go to and I'll care for them and I'll help them. I want them to know that I am always a source of trust when it comes to the difficulties in this life. Like, there are certain things that I can't be their only source of trust in everything, but I can choose what matters most and really focus my efforts there and try to be someone who they can absolutely look up to and they can know no matter what I'm going through, no matter what I'm experiencing, this is someone I can go to. I want that. And so we're going to be talking more about how to build that kind of trust. And one way to do that, point number one, is by being present, by being with them, by sometimes sacrificing time that you might want to spend doing something else and making sure that you spend quality time with your children or with your spouse or when you can with your grandchildren or, you know, again, I think these principles are largely applicable across a wide range of relationships, but it is hard to trust someone who is absent. It's hard to trust someone you don't know. So part of this is going to be spending time together and building that trust and not simply being present, but being present for a good amount of time and consistency. What I mean by consistency is there are times when your relationship will be good and there will times where it will be frustrating and there will be times when it is rocky. There are times when people are happy and there's times when people are sad. We just read Philippians 4 earlier and Paul talks about the crazy nature of life, how sometimes there's abundance and sometimes there's poverty and sometimes you're filled and sometimes you're empty. It's like all of that's true in our relationships also. They need to trust that even when things are at their worst, you will be there and you will be open to them. Like, that's the type of trust, that's the type of consistency that we want to have when it comes to presence and when it comes to love. It's not something that rises and falls and comes and goes with the feelings I'm having at a fleeting moment. It is something that I have committed myself to. As an act of obedience to God and an act of love for this person, I will be there. And I will make that a priority in my life. So, one thing, presence. And a lot of times that doesn't happen by accident. It happens when you look at your schedule and you prioritize and you are intentional about making this time happen. I would encourage parents, husbands and wives, all of your relationships, if you want that relationship to flourish, if you want it to be strong and to grow, make positive time for one another. Secondly, I would say listen well. If you want your children to be able to talk to you about anything, that means you've got to be able to listen to anything. And sometimes that is tough to do. Sometimes you have other things you need to do. Sometimes the things that might interest a child and the things that interest a parent or the things that we would consider to be important don't line up very well. And if they learn from an early age that you'll only listen to the stuff they want to hear, you'll only listen to what you want to hear, then they can learn pretty early on, like, the things that matter to me, I have to find some other place to go. I'm either going to hold them in or I need to find some other outlet. I think developing a habit of listening well and listening to a wide range of things, listening to the interests of your children, it helps lay a foundation that this person loves me and will listen even when even when they might not want to hear this, even when this isn't the type of a pleasant, fun conversation. We want them to be able to do that. And I think when you do have that type of positive attitude towards listening, I think it's important when you're listening to something that's not good, when they're telling you about a failure that they've had, when they're telling you about something they did that was not right, it is also the parent's responsibility to discipline, absolutely. It is the parent's responsibility to confront from time to time damaging habits that can form in the life of your child and try to fix those, absolutely. But it is also important to be measured in that so that when your child does make a mistake, they don't only see you as punishment for the mistake. They see you as a resource to help guide them through it. I've heard, and I'm not, I don't, you can take what you want to with this, but I've heard of parents who've had deals with their kids, like when the kids are getting older, and like they shouldn't be doing this, absolutely, this would be the wrong thing, but if you ever find yourself, if you're drunk, you're at someone's house, you don't have a way to get out of there, people are going to drive, and you can call me, I will stop whatever I'm doing, I will get you, and I will not say a negative word to you about it for at least 24 hours. Like, we'll talk about it, but you should know tonight is just about getting you home safe, getting you in a safe environment, showing you that you are loved. We'll discuss this. There may well be consequences, but at the same time, you need to be a safe place. And I think that type of attitude can probably manifest itself in a lot of things. I sometimes am quick to want to teach, want to guide, want to correct, want to say, but this is the way it could have been done. And I do think sometimes I need to shut my mouth and listen better than speak. When you're a preacher, it is easy to preach. And sometimes I, as a parent, need to learn to quit preaching for a minute and listen. And I think listening well is going to be one of the most helpful things you can do. I would also say be honest. If you want to build a foundation of trust, you need to be seen as an honest person. And yes, honest with your children. By the way, I don't mean by honest mean. And sometimes people get those mixed up like, hey, I'm just being honest, when they're actually saying things that are unnecessary and cruel. That's not the type of honesty that I mean. I do believe that we should be able to give an honest evaluation of maybe something that that your child is, has questions about. Try to make that encouraging, try to be helpful. But I mean mostly by honesty in this, be someone who is dependable to keep your word. Like, if you say something, then you do everything possible to keep your word. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Like if you tell your child that you're going to be at something, be there. If you tell your child you're going to help them with something, help them with it. But be someone who they can recognize is your word, is your bond, and that you are absolutely a trustworthy resource, because one of the quickest ways to destroy a trusting relationship is to tell your friend to pick you up by the side of the road at 11:30 when you're not there. Like, one of the quickest ways to destroy trust is with deceit. And so make sure that you are a person who is trustworthy and they see you be trustworthy with others. It's like, well, I didn't lie to my kids, but they see you lying to neighbors and people from church. They see hypocrisy. That is another thing that is absolutely damaging to a trusting relationship. When they see you acting one way around this group of people, and then you act in a completely different way, particularly when it comes to, like, you act Christianly around your Christian friends, and you act immorally in other ways, or you act completely different at home. That might not always be verbal deception, but I do think that's a form of deceit. That's a form of a lack of honesty, and they're seeing that, and I think that harms the relationship and the way that they'll view you. And so being an honest person throughout your life, in your words, in your promises, and in your actions, is something that is foundational to building trust. Be an example that they would want to follow, I think, is absolutely key as well. If you want your children to see you as someone they can trust, then remember, they will not forever trust you as the ultimate source in everything. That is something that's going to wane over time. So in the things that really matter, be a good example. If you want them to be readers, let them see you be a reader. You know, if you want them to see you as an active, healthy person, then be an active, healthy person. And they may talk to you about how to be active and healthy. But in the most important things, if you want them to see you as a godly resource in their spiritual and Christian journey, then be someone who they see praying. Pray with them. Be someone that they see reading the Bible. Read with them. Be someone who prioritizes church and worship over things you might otherwise want to do. Be someone who they will recognize as a dependable source of spiritual consistency and influence. And if they are going to become a faithful child of God, they have an amazing resource right there in their own home. But you have to demonstrate that. You have to be an example of that. It's one thing to yell at your kids, you're not the Christian you should be. Don't you claim to love God? Why are you acting like this? It's another thing, and I would also encourage you never use their faith against them. We all have areas of hypocrisy. It is deeply damaging to a child's walk with God when God gets used against them for their failures. They will have failures, but so will you. And so what you do is you work together through those things rather than like turning their faith commitments against them to point out that they're meaningless or something like that. But be a trustworthy example of what it means to be a godly person. And finally, and this one kind of goes with all of them, but I do think absolutely being self-controlled and being an example of demonstrated love. By self-control, I mean, these types of close relationships in a single household, in close proximity, they will test you. They will test your self-control. They will test your mental stability. They will test you in many ways. You know, sometimes not always. You know, sometimes they're the easiest things and the most wonderful things. But there are times people will find themselves like, you know, like. And I would say, if you want your children to talk to you, then develop the habits of self-control, so that you can bite your tongue sometimes while you're listening, so that you can let them speak freely, so that you can be someone who they think, you know, I'd love to talk to them about this, but they'll just fly off the handle. You don't want that. Losing control actually never helps. No matter how serious the situation is, losing control doesn't help with it. You know, if there's a nuclear warhead heading towards you, losing control doesn't help you solve that problem. No matter how serious the problem is, a lack of self-control is not a solution to it. And so that's actually a really important mindset to have in all areas of your life. But certainly when it comes to dealing with difficulties and problems with your family, with your children, and with your spouse, remain self-controlled and remain that person who can control themselves and demonstrate love, demonstrate all of these things that we've been talking about. Because I do think so many of these things, they come down to what love looks like in practicality. Being present, listening well, being honest, and guiding someone to Christ as an example, all of those are demonstrations of love. And so demonstrate that love in your conversation, in your actions, and in your households. Is that a guarantee that your children will always see you as a helpful resource? It's not a guarantee. There's very few guarantees you can give with this. But I do believe that each of these things are biblical, each of these things are true, each of these things have been tested, and each of these things will help us as we strive to have a positive influence on our children and on our families and to evangelize our own families. And if there's anyone here who's looking for someone that they can trust, I promise you there is absolutely no greater source that you can place your trust in than God, than Jesus Christ, who gave his life for you, and the empowering Holy Spirit who dwells and abides with us. And if we can help you put your trust in God, naming Christ as Lord of your life, giving your life to God through repentance and in baptism and living for him, joining a community of faith that can help you in your spiritual journey, please let that be known. We would love to help, encourage, strengthen, and pray for you in any way we can. If you want to talk to some of our elders, we have some in the library in the back that you can talk to. Or if you would like, you can come and sit on the front row while we stand and as we sing.